Our book reviewer today is one Lynn Freeman.
Kia ora. So weird being back on this side.
Must be so weird. Really
it's,
weird.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
And I actually really appreciated this opportunity to think back about the books that meant something to me. Because, you know, we read for the job, right?
And
you
lots
read
in of
a,
books.
Yeah. And you read in a different way.
You do.
Know, you're reading for moments and ideas and themes and questions. And so it was just lovely to kick back. And as it happens, two of the books, I did interview the authors. They stayed with me and I reread them in a different way and loved them even more. So reading for pleasure is something I'm really looking forward to because I've read basically exclusively New Zealand fiction, nonfiction and poetry for the last 21 years, which has been my honour and my privilege. So they're all New Zealand books, all New Zealand.
So where do we start?
Well, this was the last book that I read for the year, and I'd been squirreling it away when I could relax. And it's A Runner's Guide to Rakiura, a novel. And Susie did an interview on 9 to Noon about this with Jessica Howland Caney. Now, RNZ listeners might know that Rakiura, Stewart Island, is one of my favourite places on earth. I spent 2 weeks as a warden on Ulva, which is the bird sanctuary down there. And I try and get down there once every year or 2 years. I just love the place. I love the people. I love the wilderness. It's remote and it's exciting and it just has a vibe, you know. It's just a unique place. So reading this novel where you knew the places very well, I perhaps read it in a different way to someone from overseas who may not know it, but it works either way because Jessica, who works for the Stewart Island News down there and that has a place in the novel, knows and loves the place and she explains it very well. So you don't have to have my knowledge of Rakiura, Stewart Island to love this thriller. And it is a thriller. It's a mystery. And it is absolutely gripping while at the same time you learn a lot. So she dots through the book these little passages from the Stewart Island News, little bits of information. Sometimes it's gossip, sometimes it's science information. But at the heart of it, it's a story of Maudie. She's come to Stewart Island. She's on the run. She's kind of physically damaged, emotionally damaged. She doesn't expect to stay there. She meets someone and has it's a great love story here. And she falls in love with the island life as well. And she's there to write a book about being the runner's guide to Rakiura. She's a marathon runner, but it becomes so much more and she gets engrossed in this mystery. So she's got a mind like you, like a very curious mind, Catherine, and when she gets a hold of a question she can't answer, she just keeps delving and delving and delving. And this is a mystery on Rakiura Stewart Island, kind of a folk story, hidden treasure. We love these. But she is smart and she investigates and we just learn so many beautiful stories along the way. So I adored this book. I read it slowly, which I don't usually do. I recommend it wholeheartedly on so many levels.
Thank you. A Runner's Guide to Rakiura is by Jessica Howland Caney and it's published by Quentin Wilson.
And my next one is Barefoot, and this is by R.V. Bailey or Ruth Bailey, and this is a first-time writer. And I have to say that last year was a fantastic year for first-time authors. Jessica also in that category. A very different book, but I think what they share is a kind of a beautiful poetic style of writing. You know, it's every word is there for an absolute reason, and it's lyrical in its writing. And this is a story really of another woman, a lost soul. Adelaide has had a traumatic time in her childhood, which she's trying to resolve. She meets John at a beach when he's saving a child. He's lost his first wife, so they're both seeking love. They come together. Beautiful love story just before the war. This is 1939. They meet. Not great timing. They marry. She adjusts to having somebody in bed with her in this beautiful life. He signs up against her wishes. He signs up. He feels absolutely driven to go to war, to do his duty. And then the book becomes something other. So we have Adelaide at home, and when she gets his letters, they're not always in order, because that's what happens in wartime. She doesn't want to fold them up and put them away. She lays them out in the house and she fills the house. She puts little stones on them and she fills the house with them, on the walls, on the floors, you know, several years' worth of these beautiful letters. And she talks about when she puts her hand on the letterbox and there's nothing there, you know, the sadness of grasping in the dark for something. So these are her anchor. And then And at the same time, we hear John's story from the perspective of war. And I would say that Ruth is an historian. She's done a huge amount of research, 20 years in the making, this novel. It's a slender novel. But she's read many of the soldiers' diaries. And so we get this transition that the men make. It's the camaraderie that they have there, and they have practical jokes and moments. And that becomes home suddenly. And these letters from home are important, but New Zealand, Aotearoa, his wife, becomes more distant, and he's in the moment with these colleagues in the sand and facing death. And then they kind of, there's a union again between the two of them in a way. So it's a beautiful, thoughtful, gorgeous, sad, delightful book, which I recommend wholeheartedly.
Now that is Barefoot. It is by R.V. Bailey, and it's published by Eden Street Press. Your third book for us is The Art of Copying Art by Penelope Jackson.
Penelope's great. She's been interviewed many times on this show and on RNZ. Art crime is one of her things. She's involved with a symposium. She's written several books. The Art of Copying Art, you think it's going to be all about forgeries, right? You know, the villains of the piece, this nefarious side to art. What she's actually writing about is that in part, but legitimate ways that copying art has been used. So it might be art students copying masterpieces to fully understand the brushstrokes. It might be back in the day when you had artists' studios and they had their novices or interns.
She's going to need another chapter. She's going to need another chapter on AI, isn't she?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a chapter on movies and art. So creating art for props. And it's one of my favourite chapters, actually, because if you've seen Mr. Turner with Timothy Spall in it, he took 2 years of painting classes to do a good job. But they were really detailed and beautiful and accurate copies. Girl with a Pearl Earring, about Vermeer, they did 60. They had to create 60 copies. And they're not just putting them in the printer, you know, and putting them in a frame. These are the brushstrokes, because we've got, you know, cinema screens, brushstrokes count. So beautiful work.
Pixels.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, it's like, you know, makeup in here. They have to be exact. Theatre, you can get away with it. So there's an art to that. And it's a personal story, too, for Penelope. She puts in some of her examples of encountering European art and then realising they were copies. But New Zealand had a lot of copies coming from Europe, of course, in the early days before we created our own. So it's a really good read, this one. She's a fantastic writer. Nice little story. Dick Frizzell went online and found someone trying to sell a copy of one of his prints. That was quite interesting, that he was able to track them down because the framer left their detail. The framing details were on the back of the print, and they track down the bad person who did it. So, look, there's many aspects to it. It's not dry. It's entertaining and enjoyable and thought-provoking. And her argument is, you know, art copying deserves its own place in art history. She has given it to us.
Thank you. The Art of Copying Art is by Penelope Jackson. It's published by Palgrave Macmillan. I don't think mine ever got beyond, what were those paint by numbers?
You know, guilty secret, I do those as relaxation.
Do. I could never stay within the lines.
No, but that's okay. You can go mad and crazy. You don't even have to use the same colours, Katya.
I'm not a within the lines kind of person. Thank you, Lynn Freeman, with her books this morning, three of her favourites.